AOPA presents Never Again, True Pilot Stories from the World of General Aviation. In this episode, an in-flight electrical failure in harsh weather tests the nerve of a low-time Piper pilot. Find out what happens in The 100-Hour Itch by Shane Tajarity. I was a freshly minted private pilot, having fulfilled my childhood dream at Montreal's Saint-Hubert Airport. I was nearing that ego-boosting 100-hour mark, and was itching for a real mission, a long and exciting cross-country. The perfect opportunity came in August of 1984. Living in Winnipeg, I decided to take three friends to London, Ontario, for an international youth conference. It would be more than 25 hours round trip and would require complex cross-country planning, a border crossing, and busy airspaces. My aircraft, a Piper Arrow 4, was the perfect machine for the mission. I lived and dreamt the entire flight for weeks and left nothing to chance. We departed from St. Andrews Airport, Charlie Yankee Alpha Victor, on August 24th. It was a beautiful day. After refueling and clearing customs in Minneapolis, we headed towards Chicago's Palwaukee Airport, now Chicago Executive. I planned to try to enter the terminal area from an angle that didn't require too many frequency changes, but that did not pan out. Suddenly, things got extremely busy and I was stretched to the limits. The controllers were kind and cut this Canadian aircraft some slack. Before long, we were on our way for the long final leg to London International Airport. As we landed in London, our sense of joy and exhilaration was indescribable. My pride knew no bounds. After three exciting days at the conference, on the early morning of August 28th, we headed back on our return trip. We cleared customs at the busy Chicago Midway International Airport, and as we took off for the next leg to Minneapolis, I knew something magical was going to happen. By this time, I had 97.6 hours accumulated, and the next leg to Minneapolis would have me pass over the 100-hour mark. We landed in Minneapolis in mid-afternoon. After refueling, I checked the weather, and flight services informed me that though my route of flight looked to be VFR, a low-pressure system was hanging over the Great Lakes, and we could expect some weather moving westward over our route of flight. I tried in vain to get the controller to tell me that it would be safe for us to take off. That was not his job, of course. I had a decision to make. The weather along the route was VFR, and I would have enough fuel to divert or go indirect to Winnipeg. I debated with myself, but not for long. We all had to be at work the next day. We were on a budget, and staying at a hotel would blow that beyond our means. We had filed for 6,500 feet all the way to Winnipeg. As we headed north, I started noticing the lowering clouds getting uncomfortably close. I descended to 4,500 feet, and then to 3,000. The farther north we flew, the more we encountered weather. By this time, I could see precipitation to the east and northeast of our flight path. Soon, the sky over us was getting darker, and the weather was closing in. I was getting uncomfortable, but still hoping to make it through. Then we started to encounter some showers, followed by turbulence. It was mild at first, but getting increasingly violent. The passengers were dead silent. I was talking to the Minneapolis controller and informed him that I needed to descend lower to stay out of the clouds. I was now at 2,000 feet, and the weather was all over me. We were bouncing everywhere. I was focusing on flying the aircraft, and navigation had to take a back seat. I no longer knew exactly where we were. I wanted to keep us out of the mess and find a way through this system. The further we progressed north, the worse it got. I diverted west, then south, only to find that it was as bad or worse. I contacted the Minneapolis controller. No response. I kept calling. Suddenly, I found myself in a cold sweat. The passengers were beginning to panic. Time was still. I was calling for help repeatedly, but the silence was deafening. We were now at about 1,000 feet above the ground, flying in all directions to dodge the weather with the skies darkening by the minute. I felt alone and helpless. I made a few more calls and declared an emergency, but nothing could be heard on the other end. Suddenly, I heard a voice on my radio. Canadian Piper Aircraft, this is Federal Express Cargo at 17,000. Can you hear me? Here is the conversation as best I remember it. Yes, yes, I can hear you. We're in trouble. Can you help? I hear you loud and clear. Don't panic. Just fly the aircraft. Minneapolis Center is trying to contact you, but they can't hear you, and I am assuming neither can you. I'll work with them to help vector you to an airport nearby. Just stay calm and stay with me. A few minutes later, he started giving me headings to fly. He told me that I was just slightly north of Mille Lacs Lake, and he would give me vectors to fly to Brainerd Lakes Regional. He asked for my altitude and constantly talked me through it. Visibility was extremely poor. The airport manager was flashing the airport lights, which could only be spotted less than 2 miles from the airport. I could not describe the joy in the cockpit. I almost screamed. As we approached the airport, the lights passed beneath the wings at close proximity. I can't describe the joy of that touchdown. The airport manager helped us book a local motel and drove us there. When we got to the room, there was silence for some time. Everyone knew we were lucky to be alive. By the time we landed, I had just about 101 hours of flying time under my belt. The next morning, we woke up to a magnificent clear day. We headed to the airport, and I did a quick pre-flight, checked the weather, and took off toward Winnipeg. 1 hour into the flight, I noticed the autopilot beginning to malfunction, followed by other avionics. What was happening now? I did a full check and noticed that the ammeter was not charging and we had lost almost all electrical power. I turned off all non-essentials. I was fewer than 60 nautical miles from Winnipeg. I was familiar with the airport and it usually is not a busy place, so I decided to proceed to Winnipeg and plan a Nordo landing. I lowered the landing gear manually and landed in Winnipeg Airport and taxied to the FBO. I shut down and felt relieved that we had finally completed the entire journey, albeit with a questionable score. We noticed that the battery had completely drained. Upon inspection, we realized that the alternator had moved on the bracket and the belt was loose. Hurrying to pre-flight, I had omitted this important check during my walk-around. Perhaps the alternator had moved because of the previous flight's violent turbulence. I realized that I had made my second major judgment error in as many flights. That afternoon, I went to my office and began to contemplate the events of the past 24 hours. Why did I so badly fail this mission? Many questions lingered in my mind. I began analyzing and answering these questions. At the top of the list, I wrote, "Never start a flight unless you have assured yourself that you will be able to complete the flight 100% successfully and safely from engine start to engine shutdown." I knew that I had failed that mission statement. When I took off from Minneapolis, I had doubts about the weather. I did not fully understand what the system was doing, and I could not 100% confidently envision myself completing the flight successfully and safely. Had it not been for many professionals who came together to save us, we would not have made it. I allowed that to happen in the second flight, making assumptions that since the weather was no longer a factor, all else would be fine. That, of course, turned out to be a wrong assumption. It took me more than a quarter of a century to finally muster up the courage to share this story publicly. Perhaps the greatest motivation for this is my son's completion of his Canadian recreational and PPL requirement last summer at the age of 16. He has around 65 hours and will soon be shooting for that elusive and highly itchy 100-hour mark. This lesson is for him and for all those who embark on the serious and sacred task of piloting an aircraft. Do you have the 100-hour itch? What about the 200-hour? Or the 500-hour itch. Whatever it may be, resist the temptation. Humble yourself with an attitude of learning and approach every flight as a conservative and consummate professional. The Never Again Podcast is brought to you by AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and by AOPA Pilot Magazine. You can read more Never Again stories online at aopa.org/neveragain. While you're there, you can also join online discussions, Check out AOPA's online flight planner and take interactive online courses from the Air Safety Institute. All of this and more at AOPA.org. The Never Again podcast is produced by Royce Earle. Thanks for listening. Fly safely.